You are listening to the Mission Matters Podcast Network, where we amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, executives, and experts.
Welcome to the Real Estate Lowdown. I'm your host, Bill Bimel. The Real Estate Lowdown is your weekly opportunity to step into the conversations going on in today's real estate and mortgage markets. We explore terms and concepts of the industry, host interviews of intriguing industry cohorts from high net worth investors to real estate agents just making their mark. We will share our love of all things real estate, bringing you the most innovative and sustainable real estate lifestyle ideas each and every week. If you enjoy what you hear today, hit the follow button, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and please share your support with a quick review. You can find me on the web at billbimel.com, and thanks for joining this episode of the Real Estate Lowdown. Jake Harris, welcome to the Real Estate Lowdown.
Thanks, Bill.
You know, why don't you do us, our audience, a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us what you're up to. Why, you know, what your connection to real estate is, and start with that.
Sure. I was actually kind of just thinking of something funny whenever somebody's like, what are you up to? And I say 5'10", you know? And so I'm still 5'10", or maybe I haven't measured myself in a while. So maybe I'm still about there, about average US, you know, male height is where I land. I do commercial real estate. I run a private equity real estate company. We've been, you know, in the past, we ran and I was part of kind of buying a lot of distressed assets, single family houses at scale. We did 1,300 homes in 23 states. We sold off some of those portfolios to the institutional buyers, Invitation Homes, Colony Capital, Tricon, and the others. And we were competing against them. And really what my kind of claim to fame was just being one step ahead of them outside of a market that maybe had really tapped into that about 7 years ago, 8 years ago. I started pivoting into commercial real estate. The space was very, very competitive on the single family kind of landscape. And I use a lot of data analytics to kind of run some analysis on where we're going to invest. And most of that is now in Central Texas. So Austin, San Antonio, and that kind of corridor there. I wish I would have bought a lot more in Austin in 2015 that kind of took off on like a rocket ship. And so since I can't tweet out like a dog faced and have my crypto, you know, a portfolio go up $1 billion in an afternoon, it's difficult to find a good deal in Austin still. So we are very much doubling, tripling down into San Antonio because we think that market is one that is still very, very much flying under the radar. So, but we do that, you know, have a long past, I say long-ish, you know, it feels like I'm just getting started. 20 years in the industry. It started in flex industrial, you know, tilt wall construction, you know, working for Equity Office Property as a contractor to Equity Office Property. I didn't know who Sam Zell was when I was 23-year-old kid. But now 20 years later, I still do real estate. I've been kicked in the teeth a few times, crying on the corner. And we can talk about that as well.
Well, I have one of my mentors who is a multi-millionaire in the mortgage and industry. He's obviously made money in real estate. He's made money in other areas. And, you know, he's a partner in a multi-billion-dollar private equity fund. And he was our backer at my previous firm and ended up being a mentor of mine. And he used to say that if you don't lose money on a deal once in a while, then you're not taking enough risk. So yeah, getting kicked in the teeth is part of the industry. It's how you get, how you learn, how you grow. And it's really interesting to hear, you know, some of the, I didn't realize some of the similar backgrounds that we share. First of all, we both have been in residential and commercial real estate. A lot of guys take one or the other or not, you know, they're not bouncing back. And the single family rental program, you know, and the, you name all of those companies that I've done business with, that one of my funds in Florida back in, you know, the 2012 to 2014 was exactly targeting single family rental And we ended up, you know, it was hard to compete with the Invitation Homes. These guys were what I thought was overpaying for stuff. And so we had decided at one point we did go ahead and split our portfolio between Colony and IH3 and sold it off to them and still made a profit ourselves and went back to buying non-performing loans. So yeah, I totally, as a matter of fact, I don't know if you, my friend Jason Shapiro, who is going to be on, he owns Logs, he'll be on a future podcast, but he was, I don't know if you remember him, he was one of the big acquisition guys on the national level, like the boots on the ground for IH back then. Small world, isn't it? You know, small world. So what is your, let's drill down a little on, you know, your current strategy, because obviously you give a lot back, you know, you've got the book, you've got coaching, you've got your podcast, and so I've seen some YouTube stuff. And by the way, you look a lot younger than me, and I feel like my listening audience obviously won't be able to know. They'll have to Google you online. So, you know, talk more about this, you know, the recent strategy, the commercial, focusing on San Antonio. What kind of assets are you pursuing, and what's your strategy? Is it a long-term buy and hold? Is it a value-add fix and flip, or is it everything?
Yeah. So, you know, those are great questions as far as on strategy. And I'm going to say it kind of depends on the bucket in which we're investing out of. And so as we have different kind of investors, those investors, and we have different time horizons. And that's one of the big things that I try to, you know, talk to people. And that's, you know, like you said, coaching or people that come to me is like, I'm ready to get into commercial real estate and I see you doing these deals and I want to start doing deals. And I really talk about is first understanding like your business plan, understanding the framework and the context of like, what is your objective? And that was one of the big things as well that you mentioned, like, you know, Invitation Homes, same thing. They're paying, you know, buying properties more than it was worth. Like it was like, and let's give an arbitrary number. Say the market value was $250,000. They came in and bought it at foreclosure at $275,000. And right. Then they still had to fix it up. And it was like, this doesn't make sense to me. Well, really what it was is they were executing a different business model, a different business plan and investment thesis that, hey, previous peak pricing was 500,000. We'll be all in at 70% of that previous peak price. And then we're going to be, and they were macro correct on their market assumptions and their investment thesis. They made billions of dollars. I was micro correct and I could save 10 cents a linear foot on the baseboard. And I eked out an extra, you know, $875 per house that we did. And so at the end of the day, they were correct for billions of dollars. And I made an extra $875. I probably paid 50% on taxes, you know, and it was like, and then you cut out the investors and everyone else. And I was like, damn it. I was wrong. And so what I realized, and you know, why I'm investing in San Antonio or why I'm investing in some of these other, you know, particular markets is just by kind of, and I told you earlier, being ahead of the institutional investors, being one or two steps ahead of them, we want to go buy deals that have good intrinsic fundamental real estate investment so we can get cash flow. We want something that has good cash flow or has a good value add strategy, or we can buy it under the price in which you could build it. So again, a value kind of investment strategy, either through a value add that we can pull a toggle, or we're buying it under its replacement value and get some good cash flow during that time period. And then when the institutional investors come in, you know what? They don't want to do the hard work. They have their cost of capital so much lower than everyone else's. Their ability and to operate is so much more efficiently. And so if I'm trying to go compete on their business model, I'm going to fail. I am not as good as an operator as the Blackstones and Carlisles and Colonies of the world. They're better at that game than I am, and their cost of capital is cheaper, and they can get things at a bigger discount. So that means is what we go do is do some of the hard work of assembling these portfolios. So when they do show up, we go, here it is with a pretty bow, and we can also make a premium on those assets. And so it is very, very focused on key markets where they have population growth, affordability index, you know, job growth, and a good mix of demographics, so that when we run some stress tests and some risk analysis on it, like what happens if oil and gas goes out of favor, or the market takes a tank. Currently, you know, inflation and interest rates and a lot of other economic pressures are really pushing in a lot of areas. And we're seeing like who's being affected by that. And so like Texas in general, Florida, and some of the places in the South are big beneficiaries of some maybe political divide, the taxation increases. And so you can do this and you can track population declines and where people are moving. And if you just go, hey, there's 10,000 more people living here, guess what? 10,000 more people need more houses, they need more stores, they need more shops and office and everything else. And so, and that's, it comes back to a fundamental supply and demand.
Yeah, I love
Econ 101.
You've picked a market. You've got the reasons demographically to support it. San Antonio, what I love about San Antonio, it's not like a new market. You know, it's just a regrowing market, right? It's been around. It's one of the oldest cities in America. So if anything, it's got history and class. And there's a lot that's, you know, and there's a lot of reasons to pick it. I get all of that. I want to take a step back to what you were saying about you getting it right on a small scale and then passing off it to IH and Colony, you know, these rental companies, rental funds, and them getting it right. It is interesting because I agree. When I looked at their business model, I was scratching my head saying, how is it possible that these people are going to make any money? And I kind of always knew the guys that founded it were going to make money because, like you said, it was a different play. So I'm kind of repeating a little bit of what you said for the audience to laymanize. The different play was that they're about aggregating it and turning it into a security where that's how you get billions of dollars. You know, it's the good old boys securitization structured finance play. And you're right. They didn't care. They figured, oh, you know, we'll figure out how to manage all these broken toilets and these things, and it'll just happen. And that's it. You know, it is an industry that I guess was ripe for some sort of commercialization or institutionalization, single family rental homes. Along that lines, how much do you think, now looking at where we haven't even talked about what you think, where you think we're at in the market cycle, we're going to get into that conversation right next. But like, how much do these private equity funds play a role in the huge run-up in residential real estate values or any even commercial values in real estate the last 5 years?
I don't think that much. I think they may be, you know,
because they're in the billions and because it's a multi-trillion dollar industry, it still isn't having, it's just the overall, they're not the big player. You don't think, do you ever worry that Colony is going to go out and say, you know what? We're going to cash out. And I mean, what would that do to the market if they decided to sell their entire portfolio?
Well, so there's a lot of things that you mentioned, even talking about that, the securitization of it. And really, this is passing these things off when they go take it and put it into a bond portfolio. And then they go put it into, you know, Texas Teachers or, you know, whoever, you know, owns it. Like nobody's going to go drop, you know, 100,000 homes onto the, and to be honest, and why I say in my response was, I think they maybe sped up some of the recovery. And I know when they came into some of these markets and they just like, you know, as a giant vacuum, bought every single house on the market. They bought every single property. And so it moved those prices up to where they should have been in a very short order. But really what we have is we have a supply and demand imbalance on the single family side of things overall. And so we need somewhere between 1 million and 1.5 million new single family or residential units produced per year. That can be apartments, that can be townhomes, that can be houses. And in general, that is through population growth, birth rate, immigration, you know, just overall functional obsolescence. And then also understanding, so you need 1 million, 1.5 million, let's use 1 million. We, for many, many, many years, 2010, you know, 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, didn't build a million homes a year or a million units. And so we're oversupplied in 07, 08. We had to go through the absorption. And then in 2012 was when we were actually at a kind of perfect balance of supply and demand. We burned off the old, and then you look at where home prices started moving up was 2012. They went up in 2012, then 13 and 14 and 15. And then really what it was is that there was less supply, less supply, less supply, less supply. And that has been aggregating and growing and growing. And there's debate on that. Is it 4 million? Is it 6 million? 2 million? How many homes short are we in this country as a whole? And then the point is, that's not evenly dispersed across every market.
Right.
You know, there's markets in Ohio where, guess what? There's too many houses because right. nobody is living there and they've moved away, and maybe some of the Rust Belt has struggled, but it's areas that are in the South or maybe the Sun Belt or other regions. Maybe, and then obviously there's been a pivot where it's really easy to build a lot of houses. Arizona maybe has too many houses right now. Maybe some of these other markets. And so it becomes very location specific, but overall we are short residential units to house the people in the United States. And that's apartments, that's homes and those others. And so because of that econ supply and demand fundamental, we're going to still see prices going up right now. Interest rates and the, you know, the market fundamentals is one thing. There's the other big 50% of what is happening with prices is consumer demand, confidence, or whatever. Same thing, the stock price, you know. So the real estate fundamentals on single family or multifamily or some of these others is very strong. However, you have sentiment in the interest rates and the environment that people got little alligator arms. They don't want to buy something. They don't want to sell because they don't have to. And so, and that's why I think there's at this kind of plateau kind of thing. Maybe we have some of the froth in the last couple of years that went crazy because the government rained out trillions of dollars and everybody felt rich. And so we had a 10, 20% expansion of the market over its intrinsic value. We're having that pull back to a norm. And so all of these price settling down is where I believe on at least the multifamily residential, a lot of these other things is where we're kind of settling back down to. And then what happens, maybe on the other side of, maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 5 years, you know, then we have another big spike up because of there's that supply and demand imbalance. I don't have a crystal ball to predict the future. If I did, I probably wouldn't be doing real estate.
Right, right, right. Exactly. That's true. So you do think we'll go through some kind of, you're calling it more of a plateau rather than a drop in real estate values. What I mean, what about cap rates and commercial side? I think that if interest rates stay high, I guess that's going to affect commercial cap rates, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so it's very market specific. So, you know, San Francisco, Bay Area, you know, things had huge upswings and then have seen pretty sizable down. Kansas City, Missouri, some of these other down 1%, 2%, like not that much. They didn't have the same boom and bust fluctuations. And so that's why I say it's very location specific. Cap, you know, things that went down and were trading in the three caps and the two caps in Miami and South Florida. Like, yeah, guess what? You're going to be in for a rude awakening when all of a sudden it's a five cap. But if you were buying at a 8 or 9, like you're probably still okay with these higher and elevated interest rate environments. And again, cap rate is not changing your cash flow. And so it just trades on based on what people are trading on a particular asset. Sure. And so if you bought it a few years ago, your NOI, your cash flow is about the same, unless you're in a floating rate or something like that. So you just go, we're going to wait this out.
Right.
Blackstone, I was on a thing where Jonathan Gray was talking, like, genius. And it, like, and that was kind of the thing, it was like, dude's genius up here. And he's like, Blackstone's never lost real money on a real estate fund. And I was like, okay, you know, to your point earlier, if you haven't lost money, you're not trying hard enough or you're risking. But they're like, we just held a fund for 10 years longer than we anticipated we were going to hold it. So you wait for the market to come back. And that's where you only lose money when you're forced to sell in a down market. So again, going back to your business plan, understanding how you're executing your business model becomes very, very important to what assets you're getting into right now. I still think it's a good time to buy real estate. it's always a good time to buy real estate. It depends on the price in which you're paying, what's your business plan, when and where you plan. If you plan to own forever, it's a good time to buy real estate.
Right. No, I agree 100%, Jake, that there are times there at in any level of the cycle, the bottom of the cycle or the top of a cycle. First of all, you can't ever time that stuff. And there it's about finding value within the market wherever you are, whatever leg you are in the cycle. And you're right. So then what's it been like? You know, you wrote this book. How long ago did you write this book? Just recently, right? Catching Knives. What kind of distressed commercial real estate deals have been around, right?
So Catching Knives, a guide to investing in distressed commercial real estate. So pandemic started 2020. You know, I was like, oh man, this is the time. Ha ha ha. You know, the market's going to crash. This is what I've been doing for a lot of times. You know, it's now. And then all real estate values like doubled or tripled. And I was like, damn it. Again, my crystal ball, it's fuzzy. So, you know, really what it goes to, and it breaks down some of the things. And even you can look at this as far as, or, you know, a lot of people in note buying world. I give an example of real time in 2020, buying a note on a hotel that was, you know, just finished delivered, the construction note, the hotel industry was collapsing. And I don't remember the numbers offhand, maybe it was a $20 million note, but was able to, you know, to buy a note for $12 million, but having it based on it and the market recovered and it swung back up and then still going to be able to refinance. And so even though it was maybe a performing or maybe a suboptimal and all of a sudden the market looked bad, the people that were prepared to execute when there was opportunity presented to them were the ones that made the most money. And so, and that's really what I'm kind of talking about is the fundamental approach to investing is oftentimes you have to do your homework ahead of time because the timing, and especially in commercial real estate, is it's not like the stock market. Tesla goes from 420 to 69. You wait until it hits the bottom and then you buy up at that point. You can buy as much stock as you want, but let's say it's the 10-story building in downtown anywhere USA, that may only trade hands once a generation. And so because of that, that distress, you need to be prepared to do that. Because if you have just one other buyer that wants that asset and they want it for maybe $1 more than you do, they get it, you don't get it, and you're out. And so the opportunities present themselves all the time. The deal of the decade happens about every other week. In any given market, to your point, you can't time it, but it is about doing the homework, preparing a team. And it's also the big thing is like, I've been doing for 20 years and I go, I have a master's degree in international real estate and finance. And I feel like I know nothing. Like, I feel like I just got started at this. The more I dive into it, the more that you understand the specificity and the expertise in certain niches. I don't have to know everything. And actually, it would be very, very egotistical to think I had this overarching knowledge of everything in the industry. So it's about teamwork, assembling teams, especially from like your business plan, put together. I hate reading lease extracts. I hate reading legal contracts. So I have attorneys that love doing that. And maybe with AI, they'll be able to do that in like two clicks in the future. But it's like, I don't like doing that. So I'm doing a disservice to anybody if I am tasked with that, you know, particular item. Same thing as a contract, or maybe it's acquisitions, or more maybe it's capital raising, or whatever it is in your business model. There's someone that's genius and skilled at doing that. Figure out what you do. And it might just be coordinating all the people. Be the coach, be the general manager, and let them all do their things and get out of the way. That may be an effective business plan. And I've seen very successful people do that, not doing anything, just putting all the pieces together.
That's really great stuff. That's really great, Jake. Let me ask you, you know, I mean, you obviously are passionate about talking about real estate. I love that. Like me, you have the book, you have the, you know, other social media that's out. Do you find that to be more a business now, or are you still... I mean, where do you make more money? Teaching people or doing real estate deals?
still make more money doing real estate. But again, you know, like we're working on some projects, a hotel project, you know, these are $30 million, you know, $40 million, you know, projects, and the payouts can be very big. It becomes a game. Money is a game as far as, and money's fake. Fugazi, fugazi. The government just showed everybody that money's fake. They just threw $20 trillion out the window and be like, so what's $1 million today cannot be $1 million tomorrow or the equivalent of what it buys. It might still be $1 million, but that's maybe what, you know, dozen eggs cost, you know, like who knows what it's going to do. So really for me, and part of it is that giving back, I feel very, very much rewarded and dives into is like discovering what is your purpose is I love helping other people see some of this. And so from that, again, because I've made lots of mistakes and I'm still making them and it's, I'm not at level 10 or the finish line. I might be a rung or two ahead on the ladder than they are. And I'm just reaching my hand down to help people up to the next rung of the ladder so that they can get there. And there's some people I've helped and they've surpassed me and they're doing better than I am doing. And I am the biggest fan for them. And so part of this is the fact of the matter is it's not about money. It's about giving back. It's a transference of energy. And I may see things in a particular way or have some clarity on that, whether it be right, wrong, or indifferent. That's just kind of, I have the ability to kind of invoke this energy into projects around other people and see with some pretty good clarity, like this is what you need to do, X, Y, and Z. Strategy stuff, that's where I'm pretty good as well. I'm good at the vision pieces of the thing, but I'm actually not a great operator. I need people to do that. I need operations managers to do those things because I'm like a lot of other entrepreneurs. It's like, ooh, a squirrel, you know, a nut. Oh, ah, you know, I'm on the next thing. And I'm like, ah, yeah, let's go to the next thing. And so it's like
ADD meds or something.
Putting into the right bucket. And so like that also, and I love that when people are like, hey, here's this problem. Here's this deal. Here's this other thing. Can I call you up? How can you look at this and help me? And I'm like, I love doing this. Like, and that's where the birth of the coaching and the other thing. So personally, it's very, very fulfilling. And it's also me leaning back down to young Jake. You know, the things that I wish I had learned, and it's as a father now, and I have three kids, and you know, it's not by your kids, what you wish you had, teach them the things you wish you learned. And so this is my aspect is like, I'm out teaching the things I wish I learned at a younger age.
That's great. Well, do the kids listen to your podcast?
My wife does. I don't think my wife has read my book. I don't think my wife has read my book, but she's listened to the podcast and she's like, oh, that's super interesting. Cause my wife's a NICU nurse. And so she's mostly a mom, and which is more than a full-time job, but she works part-time as a NICU nurse. And she listens to it while she's driving to and from work and listens to the podcast and stuff. And I have a social media and video editors, and she comes in the office and she's like, you know, Elijah does my video editing. And she's like, he watches videos of you all day long. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh, that sounds like a terrible job. You know, so I was like, well, he seems to like it. And I pay pretty well, I guess.
So what does that say about you?
Apparently my wife doesn't want to hear me talking all day long.
Well, so, you know, that's right. Well, hopefully you'll send her our way and she'll hear this conversation. Send my regards to your wife and congratulations on three kids. That's a handful. I've had three, but they were like spaced out. So I don't know if, you know, and then my business partner, he has three and they were all at once. He has triplets. So maybe there's something special about those of us that have three kids, you know, maybe lucky. Any last words? I really appreciate the conversation. So it's clear you think you're obviously a believer in real estate. It's about finding value in real estate. You think we're hitting a plateau. We don't know how long it's going to last. Any last pieces of advice for an audience that might be considering, you know, what do they do? Should they sell a piece of real estate now that they don't need? Or should they just continue to buy and never sell? Any thoughts, additional thoughts there?
Yeah. And that's, you know, it goes back to the same kind of point, is it all depends on your, you know, so it's a good time to prune your portfolio. If you have anything that's not performing, that's, you know, a pain in the ass, you know, things that do that. Yeah. It's not a bad time to just get rid of some of those things right now, as far as so that you can focus and maybe be prepared for some other buying opportunities. I think there is going to be some buying opportunities this year. I think interest rates are going to stay, you know, relatively elevated for the remainder of this year, and maybe a little bit into next year. We'll see, because if there can be some recessions that maybe push the Fed to reverse course, and also one of the other big macro plays is the amount of debt that the federal government now has, is so they have boxed themselves into a corner from the amount of, you know, debt payments. So they, you know, can be forced to lower those interest rates to make sure that they can pay their own, you know, payments. And so that's why I don't think it is actually going to be a very, very long, like many years. I think it actually going to pull back down to that. The United States is still the tallest midget, you know, world speaking, as far as economically, you know, the US dollar is still pretty strong, but who knows? I mean, Russia can drop a nuke tomorrow and, you know, China can invade Taiwan and we can kick off World War III and everything go through several years and 4 or 5 years of very, very bad. So, but the one thing and the advice that I often give to people is if you're haven't started, you need to take action. Through action is almost everything is solved. For people that are thinking that real estate is going to be passive, it's not. And so when I look at that, is most people, a doctor, a high net worth individual, somebody that maybe has money, they think, oh, I'm going to now start buying a flex industrial center, or this, you know, a single family house, is they get a very rude awakening that it takes a lot of work to manage those leaky toilets, and it takes a lot of work. And you're trading one job where you make hundreds of dollars an hour for one that you make $20 an hour. So stop trading your time for one job for another and really focus on, you know, kind of like what you do, Bill, is like allowing people to be passive investors in vehicles that don't require more of their time. And that's one of the things that I wish I learned when I was younger, was making sure to carve out some of these and flip revenues and putting them into passive vehicles, put them into syndication, put them into funds, put them into people that have very good operations, so that your cash flow ultimately can buy back your time, because time is your most precious commodity. And if you want to be a real estate investor for the rest of your life, that's great. Maybe it's the lessons that you can go learn being active in the real estate space. I believe is real estate is a great investment, but it's actually they're answering to, and I answer to, my LP investors. And guess what? They go, when's my K-1? Where's my report? Where's my returns and my distributions? And so I'm answering to them, even though I'm putting together these deals and signing on the debt. So I was like, oh, I want to be the LP investor. They go, oh, I want to be the GP or the sponsor or the syndicator, and be like, we should switch, you know, like, and so that's what I say is like, don't be, you know, glamorize the world of real estate. You can make tremendous amounts of money. It takes a lot of work, hard work and time. Or if you already have money, man, figure out how to be a passive investor and buy back your time.
Fantastic. I love it. Buying back your time. There's no better way to finish that. Well, I will have some information in the memo of this podcast on where to find you online. The easiest thing to do is to go to catchknives.com and find your book, how to reach out to you. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with my audience and talk with me. And it's been great getting to know you. And let's have you back in 6 months and see how that San Antonio strategy is panning out.
Awesome. I look forward to it.
Thanks so much, Jake. That's a wrap of today's episode of the Real Estate Lowdown. I enjoy bringing this content to you each and every week, and I really appreciate you tuning in. If you haven't already done so, please share the Real Estate Lowdown or any episode, any favorite episode, with your friends, family, and, you know, if you don't mind, leave a positive review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Remember to follow us so you don't get notified every time a new episode is released. Love to hear from you directly at billbymel.com. Till then, see you next time.
This has been a Mission Matters Network production. Listen to this show and browse our entire catalog by visiting missionmatters.com.